शिवायाम्
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवायाम्
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवायाम्
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवायाम्
श्रीमल्भागवदाख्योऽयम् प्रत्यक्ष कृष्णमेव हि स्वीकृतोऽसि मया नाथ मुक्त्यर्थम् भवसागरे मनोरथे मदीयोऽयम् सफला सर्वथा त्वया निर्विघ्नेनैव कर्तव्यम् दासोऽहम् तव केशवाम् भवे भवे यथा भक्ति पादयोस्तव जायते तथा कुरुष्व देवेश नादस्त्वन्नो यत प्रभो नाम संकीर्तनम् यस्य सर्वपापप्रणाशनम् प्रणामो दुःखशमनम् तम् नमामि हरिम् परम् जन्माद्यस्य यतोऽन्वयादितरदश्चातेष्वभिज्ञस्वराल्तेने ब्रह्महृदा य आदिकवये मुह्यन्ति यल्सूरयाम् तेजो वारिमृदम् यथा विनिमयो यत्र त्रिसर्गो मृषाधाम्ना स्वेन सदा निरस्तकुहगम् सत्यम् परम् धीमहि धर्मप्रोजितकैदवोऽत्र परमो निर्मल्सराणाम् सताम् वेद्यम् वास्तवमत्र वस्तु शिवदम् तापत्रयोन्मूलनम् श्रीमल्भागवते महामुनिकृते किं वा परे ईश्वरः सद्यो हृद्यवरुध्यतेऽत्र कृतिभिः शुश्रूषुभिः तल्क्षणाल् निगमकल्पतरोर्गलितम् फलम् शुभमुखादमृतम् द्रवसंयुतम् पिगद भागवतम् रसमालयम् मुहुरहो रसिका भुवि भावुकाः सच्चिदानन्दरूपाय विश्वोत्पत्यादिहेतवे तापत्रय विनाशाय श्रीकृष्णाय वयम् नुमाम् यम् प्रव्रजन्तम् अनुभेदमभेदकृत्यम् द्वैवायनो विरहकातरमाजुहावाम् पुत्रेदि तन्मयदयातरवोऽभिनेदु तम् सर्वभूतहृदयम् मुनिम् आनदोऽस्मि यस्वानुभावमखिलश्रुतिसारमेकम् अध्यात्मदीपम् अतिथिदीक्षताम् तमोन्धम् संसारिणाम् करुणयाः पुराणगुह्यम् तम् व्याससूनम् उपयामि गुरुम् मुनीनाम् नारायणम् नमस्कृत्य नरम् चैव नरोत्तमम् देवीम् सरस्वतीम् व्यासम् ततो जयमुदीरयेल् कमनीयकिशोरमुग्धमूर्ते कलवेणूकुणितादृतानेन्दोः मम वाजि विजृम्भनाम् मुरारेर्मधुरिन्न कनिकापि कापि कापि नमाम् विष्णुपदाय कृष्णप्रसाय भूतले श्रीमते भक्तिवेदान्तस्वामिन् इति नामिने नमस्ते सरस्वती देवी गौरवाणी प्रचारिणी निर्विशेषा शून्यवादी पाश्चात्या देशतारिणी श्रीमल्गुरुचरणारविन्दाभ्याम् नमः वन्दे नन्दव्रजस्त्रीणाम् पादरेणुमभीष्णश यासम् हरिकथोद्गीतम् पुनादिभुवनत्रयम् श्रीगोपीचरणारविन्दपरमाणवे नमः पीताम्बरम् करविराजितचक्रशङ्खकौमोदगी सरसिजम् करुणासमुद्रम् राधासहायम् अतिसुन्दरमन्दहासम् वातालयेश मनिशम् हृदि भावयामि Last Sunday, we were talking about Sri Narada Maharshi talking to Vedavyasa Maharshi about his own example as a how Krishna consciousness or Bhagavata Dharma has actually helped him to become a devotee, or the process of Krishna consciousness or Bhagavata Dharma has helped him to become to the state of to the present state where Narada Muni was. Vedavyasa Maharshi was very much astounded by the description of Sri Narada Muni. So Vedavyasa immediately asked Narada Muni, what did you do as soon as the sages left the ashram? Because when the sages left the after their chaturmasyam the 4 months at the householder's place. They were living, and while living they blessed Narada Muni that all the stories I have told you, we told you, do you remember them? And they also gave the instruction to chant this mantra, Namastubhye Bhagavadam Vasudevaya Dhimahi Pradhimnaya Niruddhaya Namasangarshanayaja. So Murti Vyuham, the four different Murti's form that has been taken by Krishna, Vasudeva, Pradhimna, Aniruddha and Sankarsana. And that Krishna, whose holy name is to be chanted, that instruction was given by the, or in other words, in the form of a Upadesham or instruction, it was given to Narada Muni by the sages. So after they left the premises, Sri Narada Maharshi thought himself, now what to do, the next thing. These whole stories of Krishna, what was spoken by the sages, was going through his mind. You have to remember, Narada Muni was only 4 or 5 years old at that time. And this Narada Muni's little mind was churning through this whole activities of Krishna in his childhood pastimes in Vrindavan. So when these pastimes were going through his mind, Sri Narada Maharshi immediately decided to sit down and to think about Krishna. That was his process, that was the meditation, what Narada Muni has done to think about Krishna through the pastimes, what he heard from the sages. So he sat down and started thinking on them, thinking after these pastimes. And when he sat down in meditation, he didn't want to be disturbed. He was thinking about Krishna very seriously. And this 5-year-old boy, while thinking about Krishna, the mother will call him, looking for him. And he will shout for him. Narada Muni won't answer. Narada Muni will keep quiet. So when she didn't get any response, she immediately shouted his name again, much louder. Again she kept quiet. But the third time she screamed, actually disturbing the whole location. In other words, she was shouting at such a high pitch that immediately Narada Muni answered, what do you want? Now, this was Narada Muni's response. Mother says, oh no, all I was checking that where you are and whether you are okay. That's all I was doing. How would Narada Muni like that? He was trying to concentrate on Krishna, trying to think about all the pastimes. And it was in that situation that this sudden response from the mother. The mother says to Narada Muni, I was only verifying where you are, whether you are okay, or because that mother's mind was thinking that my dear son has gone and playing somewhere, got into some trouble somewhere, fell into the lake or into the river or to the well, something like that, or got involved with somebody else. So all these anxieties in that mother's mind, mother was shouting. And when the mother was shouting like this, Narada Muni was thinking to himself that if this mother can cause so much problem in my meditation, how nice it will be if mother wasn't there to give me this trouble. So this is how Narada Muni thought at that point. Narada Muni's mind was working that if this mother wasn't there, I would not have had this trouble. And exactly the same day when this thought happened to Narada Muni, that very evening Narada Muni's mother went to milk the cow around in the twilight, in the evenings. Late in the evenings, at that time, when she was trying to milk the cow, that time a serpent has bitten her and she died. Sarpovadashal prushta kupana kala chodida. Srimad Bhagavatam says, Vedavyasa Maharshi writes there, Sarpovadashal padas prushta kupana kala chodida. That sarpam, that snake that has bitten her, immediately took her. That was the arrangement of destiny. Destiny was such a thing to happen, that Narada Muni is the only person on whom he was dependent for his maintenance in this world, that mother also left this world. And when this thing happened, Narada Muni decided not to stay in that house anymore. He decided to leave that place. And now he was thinking that I am a free person now. There is nobody I have to worry about in this world. This was Narada Muni's consciousness at that point. So he started walking towards the north. And when he started going further and further, that when he left home and he walked away, the householder Brahmana who was employed his mother also was not interested when he saw the child's activities and left the child to himself to go. And he went away to the north and he went to a forest looking for Krishna. Because from the sages he has heard that Krishna is in the forest. That is where all the sages go to for performing their austerities and penances. Basically because the presence of the mood of goodness is in the forest, that the sages took shelter of the forest in all their spiritual activities. You will find throughout Srimad Bhagavatam that many, many great sages, they all lived in the forest. So our Nagamuni also went to the forest looking for Krishna. So he was tired, he was exhausted, but still his mind was going through the thoughts of Krishna so strongly that eventually he got into a river, washed his hands and legs, everything, and drank some water from the river and sat underneath the tree there. Now, before this happened, sarpodashalpadasprishta kripana kala chodidaham. Now, if somebody hears this story of Narada Muni is bitten with the snake, their people will misunderstand this. That they will, the mother will say to the son, look, Narada Muni went after Krishna. Look what happened. His mother got bitten by the snake and she died. So if you all start, if all the mothers start telling their children that this is what will happen if you go after Krishna, then this is how things are misunderstood. That, but as far as Krishna is concerned, Krishna doesn't have any such, Krishna's arrangement is such that Krishna wants a person who wants to become a devotee, Krishna assists that person to become a devotee. That is how Krishna works. Gyada klishtam kashtam tava charana sevara sabharevi anasaktam chittam bhavadi bada vishno kurudayam. One devotee prayed to Krishna, what an unfortunate situation I am. My health is completely gone. I am physically so invalid. Gyada klishtam kashtam tava charana sevara sabharevi anasaktam chittam bhavadi bada vishno kurudayam bhavalpadam bhoja smaranarasigo nama nivahani aham gayam gayam kuhajana vivalsyami vijanem. If you give me some health and if you give me some more time to live in this world, all that I would like to do is simply wander around in this world chanting your holy name. This is how that devotee prayed to Krishna. So that devotee wanted actually health. So one devotee wants help, and to him, and when Krishna realized that the devotee is serious in his spiritual life, his desire to come back to Krishna is so strong, Krishna decided to give that person help. So similarly, sometimes you notice that in this material world, sometimes a person has a situation where he has no wealth. So, and when he has no wealth, he has got stuck up in some corner in this world, and in his mind he is thinking, I'm got involved in my family life, I'm stuck here, but what can I do? I am somehow or the other remembering the days when I was able to go and see Krishna in Vrindavanam or Dwaraka or somewhere where I had an opportunity to see the deity and to worship Krishna there. But today I'm stuck in this place, I'm not in a position to go anywhere. I do not have the money to go there, I do not have the opportunity to travel anywhere. But still my mind is thinking about those days when I had been looking for Krishna. So when a person thinks like that, Krishna automatically thinks that this person has the desire to come to me, so what he needs is wealth. So Krishna provides that person for wealth. Sudama Brahmana's wife, Sudama's story in the Srimad Bhagavatam, in the 85th chapter on the 10th canto, Sudama didn't have any desire for any material wealth. He was mentioned in the Bhagavatam as the utmost example of renunciation. Then this Sudama, he did not need anything because he was totally self-satisfied, fully focused on Krishna, his mind. But his wife, she was finding it difficult. She said, unless I have something to eat, I cannot survive in this world. This was his wife's position. So Sudama's wife needed wealth. Krishna offered the wealth to her. To somebody else, now you can also see another side of it, that someone else who has who has a lot of health and a lot of wealth as well, both things. Combine these together, the person has become so proud that he realizes that, why should I worry about anybody else? I've got everything, I have got my health, I got my wealth, and why should I care for Krishna? And when that person comes to such a stage that his health and wealth is becoming an obstacle in his process of spiritual life, Krishna decides one day that let one leg or one hand goes off from action. So when Krishna decides that, that person has to ultimately realizes that dependent on Krishna is more important than he cannot depend on his own healthy condition. This healthy condition is such a thing that any moment it can change over. So when that realization comes to him, gada klishtam kashtam tava charana seva rasa bharevi anasaktam chittam bhavadi bada vishno kurudayam, then he will come to that stage, he will come and surrender to Krishna. Then he realizes that all these days I have been proud of my health and proud of my wealth, And at that time, Krishna decides that his health should be taken away. So another person, he needs health. Krishna gives him the health so that he can come to him. For another person, health is an obstacle, so Krishna takes away his health. Similarly, another person who has a lot of wealth, and because of the wealth and the pride of wealth which brings along with that, becomes an obstacle in his path, Krishna takes away his wealth. So Krishna does what is necessary to become a person, a devotee. When somebody wants to become a devotee, what is that is causing as an obstacle in his spiritual life, that is what Krishna takes away. Krishna has no enmity or friendship to anybody. Krishna's desire is that the devotee should come to him and surrender unto him. Sarva dharman parityajya mame ekam sharanam vraja. This is what Krishna actually helps the person to come to that conclusion. But without realizing all these things, we blame Krishna. I come to Krishna, I asked you so many things, you never gave us anything. And this is how we approach Krishna. And when we come and say, Krishna, Gopalananda stands there and smiles at you. And he smiles at us and we are constantly complaining to him. But what else can Krishna do? That if we are constantly complaining and moaning about our own problems, and at the same time we have no desire to serve Krishna, eventually the only thing Gopalananda is thinking in his own mind, after all, that smile, it is not a very nice thing when somebody comes to you with all your problems in this world and you are simply smiling at him. How will that be responded? That response will not be very pleasant. But still, Krishna's smiling has a different meaning. Krishna smiles then in such a way, it makes you realize that all your problems are slowly getting resolved, but stay in Krishna consciousness. That is what Krishna wants the devotee to do. Gada kleshtam kashtam tava charana seva rasa bharemi anasaktam jittam bhavati vada vishno kurudayam bhavalpadam bhoja smarana rasigo nama nivahani aham gayam gayam kuhajana vivalsyami vijanim. That if you gave me this opportunity, devotee pray to Krishna, that somehow or the other, if you give me some help, so that I can somehow live in this world without being a problem to others. I will continuously try to remember your lotus feet. Smarana rasigo nama nivahani. What will I do? I will continuously chant your holy name. Aham gayam gayam. And I will also sing your glories. Kuhajana vivalsyami vijanim. I do not mind where it is. Somewhere in this world, somewhere in a very isolated place, away from all the crowd, I will continue my life in that way. So that is how a devotee's situation is. Anyhow, if without realizing all that, if you simply think, like Narada Muni's example, we start interpreting that, oh, if you go and worship Krishna, mother will be bitten by the snake next day, then that is going to be a disaster. So anyway, Krishna taught in Narada Muni here, we find in this example, that he went to the forest and he sat down. And when he sat down, in his mind, that he had completely forgotten the hunger and thirst what he was experiencing after drinking this water from the river. He sat underneath the tree and Sri Narada Maharshi says to Vedavyasa Muni that I was remembering Krishna at that time so intensely. He was only 5 years old. He is not Narada Muni yet. He is still that boy who left his service. And he has come here, and when that thoughts of Krishna became so intense and so fully focused on Krishna, eventually Krishna decided to come. Hridyasinme shanair harim. That is how in the Bhagavatam it says, Shishugan says there, Hridyasinme shanair harim. That Hari, Krishna has come to him in his heart, inside. Krishna was not outside. It is inside the heart Krishna manifested. How did he come? He did not come like Valsyam, Kurma, Varaha or anything like that. He came in Krishna himself, as he is, he came there, wearing the peacock feather, wearing the yellow garment, having the flute in the hand, and with a garland around his neck, and anklets on his feet, Krishna looking so attractive, he appeared in Narada Muni's heart. That is why it is said there, Hridyasinme shanair hari, that in Hridayam, that Hari has appeared, Krishna has appeared. And when that appearance happened, Sri Narada Maharshi has completely forgotten everything. Seeing the beauty of Krishna and seeing that he has been relieved from the influence of Maya, from the three modes of nature, that Narada Muni for the first time in his life he experienced what is the reality, the absolute truth, the Krishna himself in his heart. And that darshanam Krishna has given, that vision, what Krishna has given to Narada Muni, lasted for some time. Hridyasinme shanev harim. That continuously, that extreme happiness and bliss, what Sri Narada Maharshi experienced in the heart by seeing Krishna in his heart, he has completely forgotten himself, and he was situated in that transcendental condition for a long time. But as soon as he was sitting there, he has closed his eyes and he was seeing Krishna in the heart. And when this thought carried on for some time, suddenly he lost the vision of Krishna. And Sri Narada Maharshi immediately felt what is distress in this world. This is how he explains in that in the Srimad Bhagavatam, while referring to that, he says there that I have first time experienced what is distress in this world. That when my mother died, Sri Narada Maharshi says, I did not cry. When one's own mother, when she died, he didn't cry. Narada Muni says, I didn't cry. But the first time in my life, I experienced what is distress. Sri Narada Maharshi fell down on the ground and started rolling and crying for Krishna. He did not look for Krishna outside. Why? Because Krishna has come from inside. It was inside he has seen Krishna. So there was no point in looking for him outside. He was looking for Krishna inside. Hridyasinme shanair harim. That this experience of a few minutes of seeing Krishna inside has completely changed Narada Muni. And Vedavyasa Maharshi was so inquisitive to hear from Narada Maharshi what happened after that. Vedavyasa Maharshi, when he inquired, Narada Muni said to him, what was the first thing what happened when you see Krishna like that? Because Vedavyasa wanted to know from Narada Muni his own first-hand experience. Somebody who has seen Krishna directly, any one of us will be interested to know from that person, what was Krishna, how did you feel, what did you do, how did you respond to that? And it says in the Bhagavatam, what had happened then? Ananda samplavo leena na pashyam ubhayam munim. The first reaction, Sri Narada Maharshi says in the Bhagavatam, ananda samplavo leena na pashyam ubhayam muni. My dear Vedavyasa Maharshi, what has happened to me, I cannot explain that. Why? I was immersed in such a bliss. I was freed from the dualities of life. This is what is the first thing that happens when a devotee sees Krishna. The dualities of life, which is created by Maya, goes away at the very moment as soon as one has the vision of Krishna. Ananda samplavo leena na pashyam ubhayam muni. What is this duality? Duality means that the living entity is thinking that he is separate from Krishna. We have left Krishna's association long back. And we have gone through this cycle of birth and death for so many times that our relationship with Krishna is totally broken. But when that relationship comes back with Krishna, that is the actual relationship. The living entity in reality has only one relationship, and that is that relationship with Krishna. All other relationships are temporary, and all other relationships are the influence of Maya. Na pashyam ubhayam mune. Ubhayam means duality. Ubhayam means the everything two in this world, happiness and distress. Black and white, heat and cold, dharma and adharma, truth and false. Like this, anything and everything if you take in this world is opposite. These two oppositeness or the opposed nature is the duality of the material world. And this duality goes away as soon as one comes to in relationship with Krishna, when one has the Krishna consciousness or absolute realization of Krishna. So, ananda samplavo leena na pashyam ubhayam mune. This is what Narada Maharshi told Vedavyas, that this first experience of seeing Krishna in the heart immediately took away the influence of the three modes of material nature. Three modes of material nature is binding us in this material world in different ways. And all the time when it is under the three modes of material nature, we are not able to see the perceived truth, perceive the absolute reality. It's covered. And Maya, by her two dual potencies, one is known as the covering potency and the other one is known as the deluding potency. So the covering potency is always covers the truth from us. And the deluding potency shows us that the truth is something different than what you actually see. So this covering potency, avaranalmagam and vichayavalmagam, as mentioned in the Shastra, is the covering potency and the deluding potency together is keeping us in this material world under the influence of Maya. So Vedavyasa Maharshi heard from Sri Narada Maharshi his first experience with Krishna. And Sri Narada Maharshi was rolling in the ground crying for Krishna. But there was no Krishna coming back to the heart again. And Sri Narada Maharshi's mind was in such a, he was crying and in such a distress as he said, the distress he never experienced. Even while his mother died, he was experiencing such a distress now at this stage. So it was then that from the sky Krishna decided to let him know what the situation is. That Andasmin Janmani Bhavan Namam Rashtumiharhadi Avivakvakashayanam Durdarashoham Kuyoginam. Krishna said to Narada Muni that you will not see me again in this world. This is the only opportunity I have given you to see me once, but you are not going to see me again in this lifetime. This is what he said to Narada Muni. But that should not be a problem. Live in this world as live in this world, carry on in this life as you like. Chant my holy names, I will be always with you. And that is how Krishna assured Narada Muni that Andasmin Janmani Bhavan, in this lifetime there is no chance of seeing me again. Namam Drashtumi Harhadi, you will not see me once again in this lifetime. Why? Avibakku Akashayanam Durdarshoham Kuyoginam. That those who are not spiritually fully realized, for them I am not visible, or you will not be able to access me, or you are not easily accessible to me in that situation. This is what Krishna told him. Then Narada Muni got this doubt, why did you show yourself to me then? If I am not spiritually mature enough to see you, or spiritually realized to see you, qualified to see you, why did you show me, why did you show yourself to me like that? Because Narada Muni's mind was working, what he has seen in his heart, he could not refrain from not seeing it, so he wanted to see that again. So at that time Krishna told him, Edat Kamaya, because if I not shown you, you will not desire for me, and that is the reason why I have shown you. I have shown you once, you have seen me now, and you know what I am like, and now you can search for me. This is what he said. Krishna, Narada Muni was told by Krishna in this way. Sri Narada Maharshi says there to Vedavyas that from that point onwards, all my thoughts have changed. He says, Narada Muni says to Vedavyas Maharshi, my dear Vedavyas, from that point onwards, my life has changed. I have never thought about anything else after that. Because Krishna has told me, given me this assurance, chant the holy name, wander around in this world freely. Don't worry about anything else, and I will be always with you. Only thing is, you will not see me. That's the only thing. That's the only condition Krishna has put on Sri Narada Maharshi. You can travel in this world freely. Sri Narada Maharshi stays there. He continued his journey, and that traveling in experience in life, he has mentioned in the next verse, that gam paryanam tushtamanam gadaspraha kalam mukto vimado vimalsaraham. That Gampadaparyan Tushtamanam Gadaspraha. Then she says to Vedavyas, my dear Vedavyas, from then onwards I had never thought about anything. I was not worried about anything. All I was waiting was, when will the death come? Gampadaparyan Tushtamana Gadaspraha Kalam Pradiksho Vimado Vimalsaraha. That Vimalsara, free from envy, that was Narada Muni's greatest quality. Vimado Vimalsara, free from pride, and waiting for the time to happen. Why? Because Krishna has told him that in this lifetime you can't see me, but in the next lifetime you will always see me. This was Krishna's guarantee. So Narada Muni was in actual terrible rush to finish this lifetime. And that is something so different than any one of us. We try to extend it as much as we can, and Narada Muni wanted to finish it as soon as possible. Kalam pradiksha vimado vimalsaraha. That kalam pradiksha, that he was waiting for the time to that happen, when will I leave this body? This is what Narada Muni was thinking. Just look at, see, Narada Muni's approach to death. Earlier we saw, when the mother died, he didn't cry, he left, he went to the forest. And now, when Krishna has given him the guarantee that once you leave this body, you are coming back to me, Narada Muni says, I was waiting for the death from that point onwards. And every night, and here also, it is also interesting to see how Narada Muni was approaching death. This death is such a thing in this life, that as soon as somebody tells us that, okay, you are going to die in a year's time, or in a 6 months time, then you can see all this courage and the glory what we have today. All this whole thing will seem will change as soon as you get that warning. Just like it so happened that once an astrologer told a person that you're not going to last more than 2 years. He looked at his chart so strongly, so carefully, and eventually predicted to him that you will not last, this is the end of your lifetime, and this particular dasha or whatever it is, he has told him that you are finished with that. You could see that person, eventually in 2 years' time, because of the fear of death that has approached him, it has become a sort of a hallucination, a mental problem for him. And that what happened was, to his misfortune, he didn't die also after 2 years. And all that was left behind was that this prediction and the misery and distress what he went through for the 2 years with that. Anyway, kalam pradiksho vimano vimalsaraha. Sri Narada Maharshi says there, I was waiting for the death. And when the death is such a thing, even if it is anybody in this world, doesn't matter whether it's president or prime minister or a very, very wealthy person, as soon as he know that the death is at the doorstep, all the things will change. Everything will change. That is the nature of this thing called the death. In fact, when you go for a relative or a friend's cremation or for any ceremony, final ceremony, you go there and you meet with other friends also. And then while everything, all the ceremony was over, when you are leaving the place, you tell your the friend, you met with other friends also, you tell them that, we will ask you, when will I see you again? Oh, he will say, we will see you next week or week after or something. But then you will also make a remark, after all, this is our situation, isn't it? I mean, one day we all have to leave like this, this, that and the other. We'll talk, for some time, there is a certain amount, degree of realization that that is what ultimately is waiting for us. That realization comes at that point. But the quickly, as soon as we leave the place, again we are thinking, oh, that is something, some mistake has happened to him. It will not happen to me. That can only happen to him. How can it happen to me? This is how we are thinking at that time, when we leave that house. So this is the nature of death. And the way the illusion, the Maya is controlling us in that way. Kalam pradiksha vimado vimalsara. That kalam pradiksha, that waiting for the time to happen, Sri Narada Maharshi says there, that I have waited for that death to happen. And every evening when he goes to sleep, he will pray to death, will you come tonight and take me away? This is what he was praying every night. And in the morning when he gets up, he says he is not dead yet. So he's saying there, oh, you didn't come, did you? This is how he asked the death personified, that why did you not come and take me away? Just like we also do sometimes when we wake up in the morning, we chant the holy name and wake up from the bed, thinking that at least today let there be no serious disaster in life. That is natural in the human. Once the devotee will always pray to Krishna when he wakes up in the morning, at least chanting the holy name and paying your obeisances to Krishna to start in a nice way. At least the day does not bring any serious disaster in this material world. So that's the devotee. But here, Narada Muni was saying that, oh, you didn't turn up, did you? And I was waiting for you. And this was Narada Muni's consciousness. So this went on for a while. And eventually, Narada Muni had to leave. And that, because Narada Muni was told that you will have to stay in this body till that is over. Arabdha karma nurvanam yapadal panjabaudigaha. Arabdham means prarabdham. Prarabdham is the thing that keeps this material body going in this world. According to the Vedic understanding, it is the prarabdha karma that is manifested and maintains this material body in this world. Arabdha karma nirvahanam nepadal panchabhautikaah. That in this material world, when survives here, only because of this prarabdha karma. So it was that prarabdha karma, Narada Muni was waiting for that to finish. And when the prarabdha karma was over, nepadal panchabhautikaah. That the material body has another name in Shastra. It is called panchabhautikam. Panchabhautikam means the five material elements. So when the five material elements together constitutes this material body. So therefore, sometimes sannyasis will refer, where are you sitting? Yes, I'm sitting on top of the panchabhautikam. I'm sitting on top of the five material elements. That is what it means. That is how they will answer. The reason, because they have that strong degree of realization that I am different from these five material elements which makes this body together. So anyway, arabdhakaranurvanam nyapadal panchabhautikaah. That panchabhautika body or the five material elements body, I was waiting for that to drop off one day. This was Narada Muni's mind. Narada Muni waited for prarabdha karma to finish. And this story is in the Shivan Bhagavatam at different places. Not only in Narada Muni's story, there's also the story of Jadabharata, Bharata Maharaj in the fourth canto, where he had to accept the body of the deer because of the prarabdha karma. That prarabdha karma will chase and prarabdha karma won't leave a person. And that will hold that person to this material body. And when the prarabdha karma is over, a devotee can leave this material world and go back to the spiritual world. So anyway, here what happened was that Sri Narada Maharshi realized at that point that he has to finish this prarabdha karma. And eventually, one day, his prarabdha karma was over. When prarabdha karma was over, what happened? Nibadal panjabhautika. That panjabhautika body or five material elements body dropped off one day on its own. And when that body dropped off, his liberation begins at that point. Panchabhautiya body is over. But what happened to Narada Muni was, he could not go to the spiritual world. By then, Brahma's day was over. That was the process of creation. A day of Lord Brahma was over and the process of creation was over. So he only reached up to the Brahmaloka. He couldn't go further than that. So he was stuck there in Brahmaloka. So Brahma goes to sleep then for one whole night. So for such a long time, poor Narada Muni has to stay there with Brahma. And that is what he says there. Nibadal panja baudigaha. That I had to stay with Brahma for a very, very long time. And then Brahma's night was over, the day came back again, next day of Lord Brahma, Brahma started creation again. So when he started the creation, he was creating in his normal way, all the four Kumaras and then the sages and then the Prajapatis, this and the other. Narada Muni was not getting an opportunity to come out. And he was still thinking that, when is this going to happen now? And he says, Narada Muni says to Vedavyas, that when I came out, ultimately, if you read in the Srimad Bhagavatam, the way Sri Shukan has used the word, Ulsangan Narado Jetim, that Narada Muni's Ulsaham, the enthusiasm to come out was specifically noticed by Lord Brahma. Eventually he came out from there. But when he came out, it was a completely different scenario. He had a spiritual body. Spiritual body, not only he had a spiritual body, a body which was an externally, it was fully situated in eternity, blissful in knowledge. Apart from that, Krishna has given me this veena, or the instrument for singing the songs about Krishna. And this veena, what happens to that is, when I am not using it, automatically it creates a nice sound vibrations and I am able to sing. So singing the glories of Krishna, from that day onwards, I have started my journey. This is how Narada Muni said to Vedavyas. And Vedavyas was very much affected by Narada Muni's whole story of becoming a devotee, how Krishna gave him the spiritual body, and in that spiritual body, how he was able to move around and glorifying Krishna and singing the glories of Krishna. So, at that point, Vedavyasa Maharshi asked Sri Narada Muni that, did you have Krishna, have you been able to see Krishna from then on? What was the next situation? And Vedavyasa Maharshi says, any moment, Ahude darshanam shikram darshanam yadi chetasi. That any time I want to see Krishna, I can see him. This is my present condition. This is what Narada Muni told Vedavyas, that any time if I have a desire to see Krishna, when I want to speak to Krishna, I can speak to him. And that is that special privilege or position that was given to Sri Narada Maharshi when he came up as in his next birth as Sri Narada Maharshi. So Sri Narada Maharshi was talking to Vedavyasa Maharshi in this words. Now there are a few things what one can understand from this. Narada Muni told all these things to Vedavyas. But in all these things, there is most important thing to remember is that there is nowhere Narada Muni mentioned that after Krishna has instructed him to travel in this world as a devotee, that there is nowhere mentioned that he has been given trouble by anybody at any time, or he had to struggle unnecessarily to maintain his material body. There is no mention of any of that in the Bhagavatam. What we have to understand is that for a devotee who has actually taken to shelter, Krishna's shelter in completeness, that Krishna is capable of providing the minimum necessities of material life, will come to him even without any unnecessary endeavor. And that is what we have to realize, that there is nowhere any mention of Narada Muni's history or in his conversation with Vedavyas that he had to struggle unnecessarily in this world just to maintain his material body. Darshanam yadi chetasi, that as and when he wanted, he was able to see Krishna. That was his liberated state of Narada Muni. So now, apart from this, Narada Muni told Vedavyas, what has happened to me, this process of Krishna consciousness, how it has transformed me into this present situation. There is something more interesting to that. In this Mahabharata, Vedavyasa Maharshi has mentioned so many dharma. We were talking about it in the last Sunday. That Brahmachari dharma, Grahastha dharma, Vanaprastha dharma, Sannyasa dharma, Brahmana dharma, Kshatriya dharma, Vaishya dharma, Shudra dharma, Purusha dharma, Stri dharma, Raja dharma, Praja dharma. So many dharma, keeping Yudhishthira Maharaj in the forefront, Bhishma Vidamaha has spoken. Vedavyasa Maharshi compiled this in the Mahabharata. But what you have to remember, Sri Narada Maharshi says to Vedavyas, none of these dharma, what you have mentioned in the Mahabharata, I have observed. I never followed one of them. And look at me. Now I had the highest realization of Krishna consciousness. that the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna Himself, has given me this body and He has given me this veena and He has told me you can travel anywhere in the material world or spiritual world freely and enjoy your life in this way. So this is what we have to realize. These two things. One, that Krishna has never, Narada Muni mentioned once in his discussion with Vedavyas that he had to struggle in this world for his living. Secondly, nowhere he has mentioned anywhere that that this Krishna consciousness, what he has achieved, this is the most important thing. What one has to realize, that Sri Narada Maharshi says to Vedavyas that I have never had to struggle once again in this material form, I'm maintaining my material body. So when Vedavyasa Maharshi heard this from Sri Narada Muni, that he was very much influenced by that. And Vedavyasa Maharshi, and at that point, Narada Muni says to Vedavyas that none of the dharma, what you have mentioned in the Mahabharata, has been observed by me. I have not followed anything. Like we were saying last class, tektva swadharmam charanam bhujam hare bhajanna vakveda pade tato yadi, that tektva swadharmam charanam bhujam hare, that even if one has somehow or the other has given up swadharma, or one who is not able to execute one's own one's prescribed duties, even in that situation Krishna consciousness will save that person from any disaster. This is what Srinarada Muni says to Vedavyasa Maharshi. In fact, why? Harer bhajanya bhakeda pade tato yadi, that if a person has taken shelter of Krishna completely and then somehow or the other that process has not become fully complete in itself, abhakveda pade tato yadi, if he falls down from that position somehow before it becomes perfection, yatra kava bhadram abhudamushyakim kovartayapto bhajanam sudharmadam, what is the inauspiciousness that is going to come from that? This is what Narada Muni asked Vedavyasa Maharshi. So this is the very essence or theme of Srimad Bhagavatam. Tektva sudharmam charanam bhujam harer bhajanna bhakveda pade tato yadi yatra kava bhadram abhudamushyakim kovartayapto bhajanam sudharmadam, that this very principle that there are so many prescribed duties for human society is supposed to live according to the Vedic injunctions. And Vedic injunctions have become a difficult condition in this world today. There is no question of following the Vedic literature or Vedic injunctions for the human society. But even in that situation, tektva sudharmam charanam bhujam harer bhajanna bhakveda pade tato yadi yatra kava bhadram abhudamushyakim kovartayapto bhajanam sudharmadam, that somehow or the other, even if one has fallen down from all the sudharma or the prescribed duties of a person, but even then, even in that case, that somehow if one surrenders to Krishna and chant the holy name, he can be protected by, that is the Krishna's guarantee, what Krishna has given. And Sri Narada Muni told Vedavyas that this is the situation, and explaining these things of Krishna consciousness or Bhagavad Dharma, write this book of Srimad Bhagavatam. This is how he instructed Vedavyas. Vedavyas was instructed by Sri Narada Maharshi that compile Srimad Bhagavatam, glorifying this aspect of Krishna consciousness or Bhagavad Dharma. What is that? This aspect. Tektva sudharmam charanam bhujam harer bhajan abhakveda pade tato yadi, that even if one has not able to observe sudharma completely or able to execute all his commitments, we have so many commitments according to the Vedic injunctions. We have commitments to the demigods, we have commitments to the forefathers, we have commitments to the sages, or there's three types of commitments for a living entity, one who has taken a human body in this world. Our commitment is not to the family and others, that's not mentioned in the Vedas so strongly, as much as the commitment that is mentioned, devarshe bhudam tamranam bidurnam na kingayo nayamani jarajan sarvalpanaya sharanam sharanyam yado mugundam parihrutyagatam. In the Akadasha Skandam, while instructing the same point, again the Navayogis, the nine sages who came there, instructed Janaka Maharaj also the same way, that these three commitments, even that is, have been wiped off as soon as one surrenders to Krishna. That is the glory of Krishna consciousness. That is the greatness of Krishna consciousness. Anyway, Sri Narada Maharshi told Vedavyas that this is how it is, that the situation is like this, explaining these aspects of Bhagavata Dharma or Krishna consciousness. Please write Srimad Bhagavatam. Srimad Bhagavatam is a book which covers this aspect of Krishna consciousness, and he instructed Vedavyasa Maharshi. Here also there is a little difficulty. When we say this, oh, tomorrow onwards I am not doing anything. I will just chant Hare Krishna and carry on in this world. I don't have to do anything else. But that's not what it means. It doesn't mean that one has to stop all work in this world and completely free oneself now from any responsibility. Now that I am only chanting Hare Krishna and a few hours, so I don't have to do any other service. Any other work is necessary. I am free from all obligations now. Everybody wants to, has to feed me properly, and I'll simply sit and eat and I'll chant Hare Krishna. That's not what it is meant. That is why we have to understand this, that there is always all the instructions in the Bhagavatam can be easily misunderstood also. That is why we were talking about Vilumangalam last Sunday, that Vilumangalam's life, when can we give up Swadharma? Swadharma, what stage one can give up the regulated principles and give up one's own prescribed duties? Sandhya vandana bhadram astu bhavadeo bhosnana dubhyam namo bodeva pidarascha darpana vidau naham kshama kshamyadam. That Vilumangalam's case, that is what has happened. That at some stage in life, it may become difficult to execute all the prescribed duties. Sometimes, even one's own life, certain situations can happen due to illness or due to travel or some instances like that. It can happen that one's own prescribed duties may become a little bit difficult. And in such a situation, one should not worry about it too much. This is what Srimad Bhagavatam says. That this Bhagavatam Krishna consciousness process is such a nice thing, that even when due to external reasons, not that deliberately one don't want to do it, like Sandhyavandanam or chanting the holy name, in some situation it may become difficult. Not deliberately done, but due to external reasons, one is forced to act or compelled, not able to do it. But external reasons, if it happens, even then it will not cause any problem in the progress of the spiritual life of that person. That is what's the guarantee, what Srinarada Maharshi says here. Tetva sodharmam charanambujam harer bhajan abakveda pade tatho yadi yatra kova bhadram abhudam ushyagim kova tayapto bhajadam sodharmada. That sodharmam, that one's commitment in spiritual life, even sometimes if it is obstructed by the material nature or by the force laws of nature, if something happens to him, even in that condition, he is protected by Krishna. So that is how Srinarada Maharshi spoke to Vedavyas, and he instructed Vedavyas, and he was ready to leave that place. At that time, Vedavyasa Maharshi asked Srinarada Muni, are you going back to Narayana Ashram? Narayana Ashram is another ashram in the near Badri Ashram. Badri Ashram and Narayana Ashram is actually the same. But Vyasa Ashram, Vedavyasa Maharshi's ashrama, was next to, not far from Narayana Ashram, where Narayana Rishi performed his penances. So Narayana Rishi's ashram is known as Badri Ashram, and Vedavyasa Maharshi's ashram is known as Vyasa Ashrama. So Vedavyasa Maharshi was saying goodbye to Srinarada Muni, and Srinarada Muni was walking his back to see Narayana Rishi, who was performing penances in his own ashram. So Narada Muni, Vedavyasa asked Srinarada Maharshi, are you going back to Narayana Ashram? Narada Muni said yes. But Vedavyasa Maharshi requested Srinarada Maharshi that although you are going away, I have got clear instruction from you. Krishna has arranged through you that I should write Srimad Bhagavatam. And that is what was causing all my distress. I have realized that. Already in his mind he realized that he did not glorify Krishna enough. And that is why it has happened. But now he has come to this realization that Krishna has sent Narada Muni, and through Narada Muni Krishna has instructed me. This is what Krishna wants me to do. So he decided to write Srimad Bhagavatam. So before confiding Srimad Bhagavatam, Srinarada Maharshi was told by Vedavyas that although I will start writing Srimad Bhagavatam, there is no problem. I have got clear instructions from you. I'll continue to write, but sometimes you should come and see me and give me some instructions whether I am doing this job right or not. And this was Narada Muni's request to Srinarada Maharshi. So when he requested, Narada Muni said to Vedavyas, you have all my blessings. Continue writing Srimad Bhagavatam. I will come sometimes and see you and how you are progressing. And I will come and check with you and look at what you have done and certify whether it's okay or if anything necessary to change. Vedavyasa Maharshi was so pleased that he started writing Srimad Bhagavatam. So before he started writing Srimad Bhagavatam, he was meditating on the absolute truth. Because now that Krishna has given me what I have to do, the message is clear what I have to start with. So he wanted to continue writing Srimad Bhagavatam. Before he begins Srimad Bhagavatam, Bhakti yogena manasi samyak pranihidomale abashyal purusham purvam mayam jatadubashrayam. That Narada Muni is saying, Vedavyasa Maharshi is saying there, his state of mind, he's explaining there in that chapter, that this is how I was feeling. Bhakti yogena manasi samyak pranihido mali apashyal purusham purvam mayam jatadubhashrayam. That Vedavyasa was thinking that what am I supposed to do? Now before I begin, he will see there in the Srimad Bhagavatam these areas of the descent of Srimad Bhagavatam to this world is a very nice thing to observe. That Vedavyasa Maharshi started writing Srimad Bhagavatam. And Vedavyasa Maharshi's request to Narada Muni was to come sometime and visit him during the process of writing. And Narada Muni has done this. And this is, there is proof also. And this is the great devotee's conclusion. That if you go through Srimad Bhagavatam, you will find there that the first six cantos, when Narada Muni, Vedavyasa has compiled the first six cantos, when it came to the sixth canto, there is the story of Ajamila. King Ajamila's story is mentioned in the sixth canto. And thinking about that Ajamila's good fortune, that born in a nice family, but the kind of sinful things what he has done in his life, he had no chance of going back to the spiritual world. In fact, on the other hand, probably he will get a full round the trip through all the hellish planets, what Yamaraj has mentioned in the fifth canto. He was qualified for that, for the amount of sinful activities what he has performed. But to that Ajamila, what Krishna has offered was the spiritual world, sent him back to the spiritual world. When this whole story of Ajamila, after he has written down, Vedavyasa Maharshi could not control his own emotions. He was so much choked with emotions of the thoughts of Krishna's mercy, what he has shown to Ajamila. And when these thoughts came through his mind, he could not write anymore at that point. He was completely stuck there. And because the emotions, the feelings that he got from seeing Krishna's mercies to Ajamila, he stopped writing there. It was at that time, Narada Muni said, and started writing the seventh canto. That is how the great devotees remember this. That is why you see in the seventh canto, it's all Sri Narada Vacha. There is no anywhere where Sri Shuka Vacha or anything. It is all Sri Narada Vacha. It is on the seventh canto, you will find there, Sri Narada Maharshi's arrival at the scene, and his dearmost devotee, Prahlada, Prahlada Maharaj was presented in the seventh canto by Sri Narada Muni. So there is clear proof also in the Bhagavatam that this statement of Vedavyasa Maharshi's request to Sri Narada Muni to come and to help writing Srimad Bhagavatam, it looks that Sri Narada Maharshi arrived on that scene, and the reason given for that is this incident in the sixth canto of Ajamila story. There is no other story in the Srimad Bhagavatam as exciting as Ajamila story. A personality who has fallen down to the lowest condition in life has been elevated to the highest position in the spiritual world by the Supreme Lord's mercy, and that is Krishna's mercy, which we sometimes are not able to understand. That how the Supreme Lord, from whom all the Vedic literature has originated, whose breathing is the Vedas, and which talks about all the laws of karma and all the laws of the reactions of our sinful activities and pious activities. And this poor Ajamila, he was given that opportunity to go back home, back to Godhead. That is Krishna's mercy. Anyway, Sri Narada Maharshi has come and assisted or wrote seventh canto for Vedavyasa Maharshi, and he went back. And then at that time, that in the beginning it says, that bhakti yogena manasi samyak pranihido mali apashyal purusham purvam mayam chatadubhashrayam. That what happened to Vedavyasa when he started writing Srimad Bhagavatam? What did he see there? He saw Supreme Lord Krishna standing there and requesting Vedavyasa Maharshi to glorify him. But between Krishna and Vedavyasa, he also saw something else. Mayam chatadubhashrayam. That Mayadevi standing there, serving Krishna there. This is what Vedavyasa Maharshi says. Bhakti yogena manasi samyak pranihido male apashyal purusham bhovam mayam chatadubhashrayam. Taking the shelter of Krishna, Mayadevi was standing there. It is to this Maya that the gopis have prayed for assistance. Kartyayini Mahamaye Mahayogini Abhishwari Nandarovasudam Devi Padimme Kurude Nama. That Mayadevi, Bhagavati, that they approached her for help, for bringing Krishna to her. And it is to this Mayadevi, Rukmini Devi prayed, Namaste to Ambige Vishnam, Sasandana Shinam Yuvam. That she prayed to Nugadevi in the temple. I prayed to Mayadevi. And you can see that all the great devotees, they have all been blessed by Maya before they went to Krishna. They have been given that a special favor by Mayadevi at some time or the other. Maya has given them a real clean passport to go to Krishna. So it is this Maya's special concession, what is mentioned there. Apashyal purusham purvam mayam cha tadubhashrayam. Maya Bhagavati, that is why many people pray to her, that please do not come on my way, don't put obstacles on my path for going back to Krishna. Gopis pray to her, Rukmini Devi pray to her, and so many instances you will see there, they pray to her for this shelter, that they do not, the influence of Maya is so powerful, the three modes of material nature, that they do not obstruct us in our progress of spiritual life. Namasya tumbhigam vishnam susandhanayudam shivam bhuyan padirme bhagavan krishnasya tadanimodadam. That Rukmini Devi's prayer is mentioned in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Namasya tumbhige vishnam susandhanayudam shivam. That in the Parvati Kshetram, in the Parvati's temple, on the day when she was getting married, the kidnapping arrangement was organized so nicely that Rukmini Devi went to the temple of the Durga Devi, and she has arranged through the Brahmana that Krishna could come and kidnap her. And standing in front of Durga Devi, she is praying to her, Namaste Tumbhige Vishnam Susandhanayudam Shivam. That Lord Shiva and Parvati Devi with Ganesh and Subramanya, they were all there. And to all of them she prayed, Namaste Tumbhige Vishnam Susandhanayudam Shivam Bhuyan Badirme Bhagavan Krishnasya Tadanimodadam. That I want to have Krishna as my husband, please provide, bless me with that. According to her agreement only, that Krishna took her away from there. And this is how in the Srimad Bhagavatam it is mentioned. So anyway, that is the potency of Maya Devi. So when this was agreed, that Vedavyasa Maharshi saw this situation, Maya Devi actually standing there and serving Krishna. Maya's position is mentioned in the Bhagavatam. That bhakti yogena manasi samyak pranihidomale apashyal purusham purvam mayam jatadubhashayam. And then what happened after that? Anartho upashamam sakshal bhakti yoga madokshade logasya janado vidvan chakre sattvada samhidam. That Vedavyasa Maharshi says there, anartho upashamam sakshal, that when bhakti yoga, the process of Krishna consciousness was coming out through his mind all the time, logasya janado vidvan chakre sattvada samhidam, knowing fully well what the faults of Kali was bringing to this generation of the human society, he composed the Srimad Bhagavatam. That is how it says, anartho upashamam sakshal, all anarthas were thrown away by them. Bhakti yoga madhokshaje logasya ajanado vidvan chakre sattvada samhidam. That he compiled the Srimad Bhagavatam, which is known as the sattvada samhidam. And it was at that point that there was this discussion between Sudha Goswami and Shaunaka Rishi about this. And they asked the question that what kind of people read Srimad Bhagavatam? And that is in one of the fantastic words in the Bhagavatam, it's mentioned there. Alma ramaschamanayo nargranda virukrame kurvandi ahaidurim bhaktim ittam bhudaguno harim. That alma ramaschamanayo, who sings the glories of Krishna, Alma Ramas. Alma Rama means one who is totally satisfied within oneself. Alma Ramas Chamunayo, great sages. Nargranda Virikrami, whose grandhi or the glands have been broken away. In other words, one whose false pride has completely gone away from their heart. Such people or devotees, Abhi Uru Krame, they glorify Krishna. Kurvandi Ahai Dugim Bhaktim, that they pay their respects or offer their obeisances to the Supreme Lord. It is their devotion that actually matters. Kurvandi ahi tukim bhaktim ittam dhuda guno hari. That they glorify Krishna with all their glorious pastimes of Krishna. Such devotees glorify Krishna. That is how it was mentioned. Alpa aramas chamanayum nargranda vivrikrame kurvandi ahi tukim bhaktim ittam dhuda guno hari. That Buddha Gunohari, that great qualities of Krishna is remembered, chanted and glorified by such great sages and those who are self-realized, who are already situated within themselves or in the absolute platform. And this is where that discussion between Vedavyasa Maharshi and Narada Muni comes to an end. And now Srimad Bhagavatam takes us back to Mahabharata. And that is where there is a, in so many places you will see in the Srimad Bhagavatam back and forth to Mahabharata going and coming. And this is at this stage the first time in the Srimad Bhagavatam we are going back to Mahabharata. And when we go back to Mahabharata, what we find there is actually Mahabharata was last few days. That is how so much it is mentioned in the Bhagavatam. The last few days of war and eventually the death of Duryodhana and incidents after that. But to go before than that, we have to go back into the background of the Mahabharata war little bit. And we will start from that, from the next lesson. Because Mahabharata war, that part of Mahabharata war, how Duryodhana and Bhima had to fight each other, and where this incident eventually led into Ashwatthama's killing Panjali's children, all these things are from Mahabharata. There is a slight little differences between Mahabharata and Srimad Bhagavatam, but whatever it is, in overall the story is the same. But eventually you will notice there that that the Srimad Bhagavatam brings us into Mahabharata at this point, after Vedavyasa Maharshi started writing Srimad Bhagavatam. So now we have decided to write Srimad Bhagavatam. At that point he sat down, and when he was able to write that Srimad Bhagavatam, he was thinking, who is going to write it? Because it may be nice if I can dictate and somebody can write it. That thought came to him. And at that point, Lord Shiva immediately realized that Vedavyasa Maharshi is going to write something very seriously for the human society. So let me look at it, what he is going to write. He called Ganesh and told Ganesh that you should go and see what is Vyasa's next effort, what is Vyasa trying to do. Because by now he has written so many Puranas and he has compiled Mahabharata and all the Vedas were divided. So all this is a divine arrangement from the Supreme Lord, that Shiva asked Ganesh to come and have and to assist Vedavyasa in that. When Ganesh arrived on the scene, Vedavyasa Maharshi was actually in trance. He was situated in the transcendental position. But when he experienced the arrival with his ears, when he started flapping that wings, then immediately Vedavyasa Maharshi heard the cool breeze coming in and woke up from that transcendental position, and he saw Ganesh right in front of him. So he told Ganesh that he is going to write Srimad Bhagavatam. Ganesh immediately offered his help to write it down. But Ganesh took the condition that he should write continuously, he should speak, and I will continuously write. This was the request from Ganesh. Because Ganesh has one quality, that he cannot do anything slowly. Everything should be done faster. That is his nature. And Ganesh by nature is like that. And nothing, he cannot do anything, he objects to that. That if anything is going slow, it's not to his liking. And also there is another thing. Ganesh, we also have the understanding, he also likes to have nice prasadam all the time. He likes to be fed. So that is Ganesh's nature. But while writing Srimad Bhagavatam, Ganesh has something interesting to offer. When Ganesh was writing Srimad Bhagavatam, and Vedavyasa Maharshi was dictating Srimad Bhagavatam, sometimes Vedavyasa Maharshi will say something, and Ganesh will not follow it, the rasam or the mellow in that. When he doesn't catch it, he will keep quiet. And when he keeps quiet, Vedavyasa Maharshi will tell him that now I will stop writing, think about it, what I have told you. And when he thinks about
evam nishamya bhagavan deva sher janma gamaja uyappa prachadam brahman vyasa satyavadi sudha vyasa vajam bhikshu me vipratide vipravatide vijnano jeshtha vitta vartamano yasyante tadakkim agaravan bhavan svayam bhuvakaya vrtya vartidam de param vaya kam cheda udasakshi kale prapte kale param प्राकल्प विषयामेवं प्रदिन्दे सुरसत्तमा नह्येव विमदाल काल एष सर्वनिराकृति श्री नारद उवाच भिक्षवे विप्रोति विज्ञाने देष्टवे मम वर्तमानो वयस्याद्ये तदमेतदगार्षम् एकात्मजामि जननि योषी मूढाधकिङ्गरे योऽल्पजे मय्याल्पजेन निगदो चक्रे स्नेहानुबन्धनम् सा स्वतन्त्रा न कल्पासिल् योगक्षेमम् ममेच्छति ईशस्य हि मोहिनी लोको योषा भार्यमयी यथाम् अहम् जगद्ब्रह्मकुले उषिवाम् सदवेक्षय निग्देशकाला विल्पन्नो बालकपञ्चहायिनाम् एकदा निर्गताम् गेह दुहन्दिम् निशिताम् गनि कर्पोदशल्पदा स्पृष्टाम् कृपणाम् कालचोदिताः तदा तदेह तदहंशस्य भक्तानां शमभीप्सदा अनुग्रहम् मन्यमान प्रादिष्टम् दिशमुत्तरम् स्पीदाञ्जनपदां सत्र पुरग्रामव्रजाकरन् खेडवर्खडवाडीश्च वनानि भवनानि च चित्रदातुवित्राद्रि निभमग्नभुजद्रुमन् जलाशयान् शिवजयान् नलिनी सुरसेविदाः चित्रस्वने पुत्र पत्ररथे विभ्रमल्भ्रमरश्रिय नलवेणुशरस्तम्भकषकीचकगह्वरम् कीचकगह्वरम् एक एवादियादोहमद्राक्षम् विविनम् महल् घोरम् प्रतिमयाकारम् व्यालोलोकशिवाजिरम् परिश्रान्येन्द्रियात्माहम् त्रिपरीदो बुभुक्षिताः स्मात्वा पीत्वा हृदे नद्या उपस्पृष्टो गदश्रमाः തസ്മിന്നർമനുജേരന്യേ പിപ്പലോപസ്ഥമാസ്ഥിത ആത്മാനാത്മാനമാത്മസ്ഥം യഥാശ്രുതമചിന്തയം ധ്യായതശ്ചരണാംബോജം ഭാവനിർജിതചേതസ ഔത്കണ്ഠ്യാശ്രുകുലാക്ഷസ്യ ഹൃദ്യാസീന്മേ ശനീർഹരി പ്രേമാതിർഭയനിർഭിന്ന പുളകാംഗോതി നിർവൃത ആനന്ദസംപ്ലവേലീലോ നാപശ്യമുഭയം മുനീം രൂപം ഭഗവതോ യത്തന്മനഃക്കാന്തം ശുചാപഹം അപശ്യം സഹസോത്രസ്തേ വൈക്ലവ്യാ ദുർമനായിവ ഉദൃക്ഷ്യസ്തതഹം ഭൂയ പ്രണിഹായ മനോഹരി യുക്ഷമാണോ പിതാ പശ്യൻ അവിതൃപ്തമിവാതുരാ ഏവം യതന്തം വിജനെ മാമാഹാഗോചരോ ഗിരാം ഗംഭീരശ്രഷ്ണയാ വാച ശുചാ പ്രശമയന്നിവ ഹന്താസ്മിൻ ജന്മനി ഭവാൻ മമാം ദ്രഷ്ടുമിഹാർഹരി അവിവക്വക്കഷായാണ ദുർദർശോഹം കുയോഗിനാം സകൃദ്യദർശിതം രൂപമേതൽ കാമായതൈനക മൽക്കാമശനകൈ സാധു സർവാൻ മുഞ്ചതി ഹൃച്ഛയൻ തൽസേവയാ ദീർഘയാദേ ജാതാമൈ ദടാമലി ഇത്വാവദ്യമിമം ലോകം യന്താമജ്ജനതാമസി മധർമൈ നിബദ്ധേയം ന വിബദ്ധേത ഗർഹ്യജിൽ പ്രജാസർഗനിരോധേവി സ്മൃതിശ്ച മദനുഗ്രഹാൻ ഏതാവതുത്വോപരരാമദനു മഹദ്ഭൂതം നഭോലിംഗമലിംഗമീശ്വരം അഹം ജലസ്മൈ മഹദാം മഹീയസേ ശീർഷ്ണാവനാമം വിദധേനുഗംബിതാ നാമാന്യനന്ദസ്യ ഹതത്ര വപ്പടൻ ഗുഹ്യാനി ഭദ്രാണി കൃതാനി യസ്മനൻ ഗാം പര്യടൻ തുഷ്ടമനാഗതസ്പൃഹ കാലം പ്രതീക്ഷൻ വിമതോ വിമത്സരാ ഏവം കൃഷ്ണമലേ ബ്രഹ്മം അസക്തസ്യാമലാത്മന കാലപ്രാദുരഭൂൽകാലേ വിദ്യുൽ സൗദാമിനീയതാ പ്രായുജ്യമാനേ മൈതാം ശുദ്ധാം ഭാഗവതീം തനും ആരബ്ധകർമ്മ നിർമ്മാണോ നിപതൽ പാഞ്ചഭൗതികാ കൽപ്പാന്തവ്യോമാതായ ശയാനേം ഭസ്യതന്വത ശിശിശോരനു പ്രാണം വിവശേന്ദരഹം വിഭോ സഹസ്രൈക പര്യന്തേ ഉത്ഥയേതം ശുശ്രക്ഷത മരീചിന്മുഖ ഹൃഷയ പ്രാണേഭ്യോഹം ജജ്ഞിരേം അന്തർബഹിശ്ച ലോകാംസ്ത്രൻ പര്യേമസ്കന്ധിത വ്രത അനുഗ്രഹാ മഹാവിഷ്ണു അവിഘാതഗതി ക്വചിൽ ദേവദത്താമിമം വീണാം സ്വരബ്രഹ്മ വിഭൂഷിതാം മൂർച്ഛയിത്വാഹരികതാം ഗായമാനശ്ചരാമ്യഹം പ്രകായതസു വീര്യാണി തീർത്ഥപാദപ്രിയ ശ്രവ ആഹൂതയോ മേ ശീഘ്രം ദർശനം യാതി ചേതസി ഏതധ്യാതുരചിത്താനം മാത്രാസ്പർശേച്ഛയാമുഹു ഭവസിന്ധു പ്ലവോ ദൃഷ്ടോ ഹരിചര്യാനുവർണനം യമാദിവീര്യോഗപദേ കാമലോപഹതോ മുഹുർ മുകുന്ദ സേവയാ യദ്വത് തഥാത്മാധാനശാമ്യതി സർവം തദിതമാഖ്യാതം യൽപൃഷ്ടോഹം ത്വയാനഹ ജന്മകർമ്മരഹസ്യം മേ ഭവതശ്ചാത്മദോഷണം സൂത ഉവാചാം ഏവം സംഭാഷ്യ ഭഗവാൻ നാരദോ വാസവീസുതം അമന്ത്രവീണം പ്രണയൻ വയോ യാദൃച്ഛികോ മുനി അഹോ ദേവർഷ്യർധന്യോയം യൽകീർത്തിം ശാംഗതന്വന ഗായന്മാദ്യം നിദം തന്ത്ര രമയത്യാതുരം ജഗൽ ഇത് ശ്രീമദ് ഭാഗവതേ മഹാപുരാണേ പ്രഥമസ്കന്ധേ വ്യാസമാനന്ദ സംവാദേ ഷഷ്ടോധ്യായം സോ ദാറ്റ് ഈസ് വെയർ ദി ദാറ്റ് കോൺവെർസേഷൻ ഫിനിഷസ് വേദവ്യാസ മഹർഷി appearance is not mentioned in the Vedavyasa Maharshi's appearance is not mentioned in the Srimad Bhagavatam, but Vedavyasa Maharshi's past life and what was his previous lifetimes, what he has done, these things are mentioned in the other Puranas. And similarly also the Vedavyasa Maharshi's mother Satyavati, her lifetimes is also, although their names are mentioned in the Srimad Bhagavatam, their past lives are not mentioned. They are in the other Puranas. So I'll stop there. If there's any questions or comments, please.
Mahabharata's compiled, Srimad Bhagavatam compiled after Mahabharata.
Yes, that's right.
Now we are again, why are we taking to Mahabharata in comparison?
Yeah, because the stories that happens in the first canto after this has a relationship with the Mahabharata.
Uh-huh.
That we will talk about next time. Yes.
Last week we talked about the senses coming in the way of understanding Srimad Bhagavatam.
Yeah.
Can you expand on that? And how can we, sort of,
yes,
from our nature, sort of overcome that
difficulty? Yeah. On an intellectual level, one can understand this also, actually, how senses and the mind is causing a problem for us in realizing the truth. The Shastra says there that the three modes of material nature, that expands, that is the agents of Maya, actually, the three ropes, as they're called, they bind us to this material world. And when these three ropes, when we are tied with these three ropes, we have no freedom to come out of it. We are completely controlled by that. But out of these three ropes, one rope has some higher strength, and that is Satugunam. The Satugunam has this one good quality, that when one strengthens one Satugunam, he will be able to see things as they are. That, for example, that sometimes it is so difficult to understand that we have a conception that this life in this world is not too bad. Where is this conception coming from? It's coming from the lower modes. That when these thoughts are coming to one person, that life in this world is reasonably okay, and everything is going on well. One day death will come, I will see when that comes. This type of thinking and understanding is coming from the lower modes of nature. And as soon as one comes to the realization of in the mode of goodness, this thought straight away changes. In fact, you can see when the modes of nature changes, a person's thinking, his words, the language he speaks will change. One who is used to swearing and using all other types of language, he wouldn't use that. Because why? Satugunam has overpowered him. Similarly, his activities will change and his goals will change in life. His attachment will diminish to the material world. So many changes will happen in that person to such an extent that he will realize that he will be able to visualize the whole material life in its completeness. In other words, he will not think on a day-to-day basis. In other words, he will think that this life has a higher goal, and that realization will eventually take him to understand that death will happen to me any time, and I have a certain amount of intelligence, energy in my control at the moment, so I should rather use it, prepare myself for a better situation after I leave this body. That's one. Number two, so far he's under the conception on the bodily level, so much engrossed in the bodily level, bodily comforts and bodily happiness alone is that person's endeavor in world, in this worldly life. And plus, completely caught up in the family life or in the social life or whatever it is, that he is dragged from one day to another according to the circumstances what he lives in. But he will be able to withdraw himself from all that and reflect on one's own true position, what's my actual situation in this world, and become a lot more conscious of his own real situation. In reality, we know what it is, but you're not conscious of it. You come to that consciousness and you start acting like that. So all this is coming from Satugunam. The Satugunam's special offer is this, that once you come to Satugunam, these realities will develop in a person, in his mind, in his thinking and everything. Now then the question comes, how do one get this Satugunam? That is the next question. The Satugunam is such a thing, it is very difficult to say, that generally Krishna has given in the Bhagavatam a long description that how this Satugunam can build up in a person by associating with people who are in the mode of goodness. That is the best thing one can develop Satugunam. And secondly, not associating with people who are in the lower modes of goodness, lower modes of nature. That is another thing. Thirdly, there are the type of food what one eats. That has a tremendous impact on a person. And that is precisely the reason why Srila Prabhupada and so many other great devotees insist that one should eat prasadam, not anything else, under any circumstances. Because the moment you switch over from prasadam to restaurant food or anything else, immediately it will have a subtle impact on a person. And Krishna prasadam is higher than the modes of nature, higher than the modes of nature. It will immediately take you away from the lower modes, and it will bring that purity in him. And you can see that also, a person who has been taking prasadam for a long time, he will not ask for lower food, lower qualities of food. That will go, the taste is gone for that. Why? Because already the mode of goodness is working on the person so strongly that he will not ask for, he is more satisfied with sugar, butter and milk products and grains and vegetables and things like that. So automatically that consciousness has changed so strongly. So food has another important effect. Then, of course, there are so many things which we are helpless, we can't help about it. It's like place of residence. Now, highest mood of goodness is in the forest. So there is no question we could move into forest tomorrow straight away. That's not going to happen. We have to accept where we live in our present condition. So that is a tremendous impact on a person's mind, on the consciousness. So the place where I live and the type of books or the information he acquires through his senses of knowledge. Like we have 5 senses of knowledge and 5 senses of action. So with these 5 senses of knowledge, what we are actually doing is we are constantly absorbing things into our consciousness. Now, if those senses are engaged in reading about Krishna or reading about transcendental books, that will purify inside of a person's thing. So, this trigunam or the three modes of material nature is difficult to overcome. But by effort, constantly enduring hard, one can, Krishna says that, eventually come to the mode of goodness. And when you are in the mode of goodness, you can actually appreciate the spiritual values of life. That is the good quality with the mode of goodness. Krishna says there, nashayam yatma bhavastho jnana dhivena bhasvada. That jnana dhivam or the light of transcendental knowledge comes to a person when he is situated in the mode of goodness. If I think it doesn't mean it's the same. I mean, actually, when one is addicted to such lower qualities of food, their Krishna consciousness or God consciousness is not there. It is a simple fact. Because when one is in the lower modes of nature, there is no spiritual understanding of life. It clearly is an indication of that. That, yeah.
Same time they speak about God.
They can speak,
nice,
but yeah. But Shastras doesn't agree with that. That sometimes you can see people who create world wars in this world, they also talk about God. Have you seen that? They will kill millions each other, they will slaughter animals, and they're also talking about God. So talking about God is not a very difficult thing. Only problem comes is when you have to follow what you are talking about. Isn't it? You have so many examples in this world, people talking about God, and they slaughter animals without any mercy on them, because person who has God realized Krishna consciousness, the first quality is merciful to other living entities. If you have no mercy to other living entities who are part and parcel of Krishna, where is the chance that you can expect any mercy from Krishna? There is no question of Krishna showing any mercy to us then, is there? That if we have not shown to other living entity who are also Krishna's creation, who are also part and parcel of Krishna, only thing they are in a different dress than us. We are in this dress, they are in a different dress. But the inside thing, the soul, is the same, is Krishna's part and parcel. Due to some prarabdha, it has got that body. Due to some prarabdha, we have got this body. So that doesn't mean I've got any right to change his situation by sending him to the slaughterhouse or doing something to them. And that is not the Shastra says. So that is a clear indication that what is truth? Actually, truth is defined in the Bhagavad in a nice way. Truth is what you think, what you say, and what you do. If they are all same, then you are truthful. Not that what you speak is only considered. No. What you think, what you say, and what you do, if they are all in line, then you are truthful in your activities. Otherwise, not. So, that from that standard, everything you have to judge from the eyes of the Shastra. That Shastra says like this, that these are the things. We have those people who are talking about God in that way, they don't even accept that we are born in ignorance, do they? They don't. Because whereas we accept that we are born in ignorance. Why? That is how we were born. And because only with the mercy of the spiritual master and also by the mercy of the Shastra that our eyes are open. And that thing what we do not know in this life is provided by the Shastra. Shastra tells us this is why we should live. This is how we should lead our life. These instructions you can only get from Shastra. It cannot be concocted by mind. And mentally concocted things will have its own problems also. Like, you can see, for example, so many wars going on today in this world, isn't it? And both sides are talking in terms of God. They are both saying that God is on our side. Now, on whose side is God? That question comes, isn't it? That whose side is God actually? On their side or our side? So this, where is this going to end? So that has no meaning really. That they talk about God, but they have absolutely no faith or no understanding that Krishna consciousness is something based on Shastra. And unless one accepts Shastric injunctions or the words of the Shastra, Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita very clearly, Ya Shastra Vidhimul Srijya Vartade Kamakaranal. when lust is controlling you, you will manufacture your own philosophy. A shastra vidyam ulsraja, you will reject the shastra, and then whatever that suits you for your mind, you will make that as the philosophy of life. And that's what they're doing.
If every living entity is part and parcel of Krishna, the fruits and vegetables and plants, they are also living entities. Why are you doing
that? Yeah, well, there is an argument about this, but if you go into the Vedic literature, in the process of creation, you will realize that different living entities have different consciousness. The fruits and the plants and the lower species of life, every animal also within that in the creation, they all have different consciousness. Now, one living entity is put to another. You can't change that. That is the unfortunate situation in this material world. Jivo, phalguni mahadamatra jivo, jivasya jivanam. One living entity is always put to another. So therefore, Shastra says, Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, that you can eat these things as a human species. That is okay. Because we have to eat something in this world, because one body is surviving on another body. So that instruction is that human society can take fruits, vegetables, milk and things like that. And there are other species like the tiger and the lions and others. They have their food prescribed also for them. And they are not sinful for them if they kill another animal and eat it. But if we change the law, what Krishna has laid out in the Shastra, and we start doing things what suits our senses and start acting in that way, that is transgressing the Vedic injunction. So the Vedic injunction is such that we follow what is mentioned there to the extent what we can do. These are things anybody can follow. There are things which we can't do anything about it in the modern lifestyle. We can only pray to Krishna that we don't get the reactions from that. But things what we can follow, one should follow. And that is how this issue we have to compromise with. That those who feel that this argument is absolutely no base to say that, oh, you are killing vegetables and plants, but you're not, you know, you need say that you can't kill animals. It's not only animals, it's not a question of animal killing. That there is a prescribed food for every living entity in this world. They should live accordingly. And human society has the advantage that in the human body one can develop higher understanding of spiritual life. And that's only possible in the human body. And that to develop that higher understanding, a certain type of food is necessary also. And that is why the food in the mode of goodness is necessary to understand spiritual life. Otherwise spiritual life will never be understood. You will always fall back into the lower modes of passion and ignorance. And then there is no question of understanding spiritual life. That's finished then. There is no chance. So, for certain reasons, Krishna has mentioned that this is the food for the human species, this is the food for the different animals, and like that. And you can see, according to the food one eat, one quality is also manifest. The person who eats the lower qualities of food, his nature activities are also based on that. It's not different. And he'll always be frightened about his death. He'll always be spending millions and billions of pounds for this defense, not knowing that no matter how many billions you invest at the end, in 60 or 70 years over, you have to leave this world. Your defense is not going to help you. So this is all ignorance coming from the lower modes.
You know, we see that there are some species of animals that are vegetarians, like horses, donkeys, rhinos and elephants and cows and all that. That mode of nature which they have, does it evolve during the time or...?
Yes, animals also go through an evolvement process. They go through different species. For example, a cow is higher position. All the demigods are present in the cow's body. And cow has as high a position as brahmanas in the human society. That's why there is a verse in the Charanacharamrita that refers to that. Namo brahmanya devaya, go brahmana hidayaja. Why go? Whole symbol of Vedic culture is based on cow. Although it's an animal, its position is superior. As good as the brahmanas. Along with the brahmanas it's mentioned. So that's why Srila Prabhupada was constantly pleading that don't kill the cows. Please protect them. And that is the duty of this. So that some understanding of spiritual life will come to the head. Namo brahmanya devaya, go brahmana hidayaja. Jagadhilaya Krishnaya Govindaya Namo Namo. That Krishna's pleasure is protecting the cows. And in his own pastimes, Krishna has shown that protecting cows is a prime responsibility of the human society. So all of Krishna's pastimes also is giving us this indication that how a human society should live in this world, how one should maintain oneself, these things. So animals also have that different, like a hog, we consider a hog as a very lower species of life, because of why? You get a hog's body due to its own sinful life. That's why one has to live in that body. And you can see the hog's way of life is not very pleasant. And so that difference is always there. The three modes of nature is existing in all. Even among the snakes they exist, you know. Among the snakes also, there are some snakes who are in the mode of goodness, some in the mode of passion. If you ask people who are capable of leaving the poisoning of the snake, they will tell you which snake is in the mode of goodness, which one is in the mode of passion, and which one is in the mode of ignorance. These three modes of nature is such a subject. It is pervading throughout the creation in all living entities, in all species of life. So that is present in everywhere. And when you go to them, they will tell you which kind of snake has bitten. Once they come to know, they will make the decision then what, how the poison has to be removed. Because some of the snakes, they do not have such a poisonous effect because they are in a better position, although in a snake's body.
Cow is in mode of goodness, tiger is in mode of passion, the monkey is in mode of ignorance.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just a comment also, that maybe you can point out something here, but when we have Namaha, we also pointed out to people that in offering the vegetarian type foods, the actual vegetables themselves get benefit, you know, from, you know, the life has been taken, but they get elevated. It's like service to the Lord as well. You know, I don't know.
As long as it's offered to Krishna.
Yeah, as long as it's offered to Krishna. Yeah, yeah. So they
actually it is difficult to know the living entity's progression in life. Yeah. But once you accept that the living entity is transmigrating from one body to another, in fact, we have to say this, that grains, normally we eat the grains only after when the life is over. With the plant, and similarly we take the fruits from the plant. We are not killing the trees as such for getting the fruits. But there are so many things. But instead of going through to this, making a scientific evaluation of all these things in our modern method, that's not going to help very much in the spiritual life. What we have to understand is that Krishna is instructed us like this, and there must be a reason when Krishna says that you eat this and don't eat that. So just follow Krishna's instruction. Everything will come out, because after all, these are very basic things in spiritual life. Just to make us a human being is only Krishna is saying this, that you can become a human being if you live like this. Otherwise, one who is addicted to they are not even considered as human beings from the Vedic point of view. That somehow you come to human consciousness, that you can think properly and see things clearly by refraining from eating such food. And then when one starts thinking, you will understand the better values of human life that one can develop in spiritual life. Otherwise the life simply becomes not much different. That it says there that samanya medal pashubil naranam. There is a difference between animal and human society if it is engaged in the same kind of things all through the life. So that differentiation comes first. It begins with eating. Eating is the basics of everything. That's where it starts with.
Samanya Vedam.
Samanya Medal Pashubhil Naranam. Pashu and Naranam. I don't know, this is one Purana somewhere.
Samanya Vedam.
Pashubhil Naranam. Pashu and animal and human society, there is no difference. What is the difference, it says. So that's what's interesting. Anyway, Vedavyasa Maharshi was bringing out in the Srimad Bhagavatam that Vedavyasa Maharshi's past life, we wanted to talk about that. Vedavyasa was actually, his birth is very, very interesting. And if you read Vedavyasa Maharshi's past lives, you will know that how much they differ from our way of life today in this world. And Vedavyasa has actually not mentioned about himself. This is another greatness of him about Vedavyasa, that he has not mentioned about himself anywhere. All these great personalities, they don't talk about themselves, neither Sri Narada Muni. Only when they are questioned a lot, they will say something about their past life. Otherwise, they are not personalities who will release very much, talk about their past lives. So Vedavyasa, some information we can find in the Harivamsham and also in the one of the Puranas, somebody has added on to that. From the other sages, they have mentioned about Vedavyasa Maharshi's life, where he was actually in his past life, he was another sage called Apandra Tamas. That was his previous life. And this Amadra Thomas, or the sage, great sage, he was born again, he had to take birth. And then there was a king called Uparijaravasu. When Uparijaravasu was a king, who pleased Lord Indra very by his fighting spirit, and Indra gave him a chariot to travel in this world freely. So when he was traveling, once it so happened, this chariot had a special ability to travel in the sky. And Vedavyas, in that life, in the Uparijaravasu's life, what happened was that he was traveling, and at the same time, once it so happened that his wife, she wanted to have children. And before having children in the Vedic system, when it was properly followed, today all these things will look very strange to the modern society, that the relationship between man and woman in the Vedic society was so different than what it is today. If they come today and see how we live today, I don't know what shock they will get by seeing our way of life. And we, on the other hand, will get shocked if we read the way they lived at that time in their life. So that both sides are interesting. That in the Vedavyasa Maharshi's case also, that Uparijaravasu, that king, he was approached by his wife to have a child. Now, before having a child, there were certain procedures to follow, different samskaras to be done. Not only samskaras, and they were so rigid in following those things. In other words, their conception was that this man-woman relationship is only to have children. That was the main goal of family life. This was what was their basic understanding. And that is what Vedic injunctions talks about. And that is why in the modern society, if you say this, it will not be very much appreciated. Because everyone will question, I got my career, you got your career, and we have to finish all this career before we have a family. So if you have such careers as priority before the family life, then it becomes very, very difficult. And exactly in their time, Vedavyasa Maharshi, in the Uparijaravasu's life also, the king, before he went to the forest, his wife performed what is known as Hrudusnanam. Hrudusnanam means after she has been away from when she was contaminated, she had to spend a certain number of days away from him. And normally in the olden days, they had separate apartments for the women to live. And they live there, and after they have finished their period, they come back, and after bathing, they have the right to approach the husband for to have the children. So it was so rigid and so strict, they followed these things. And when they come back and approach this king, Uparijaravasu was also instructed by parents to go for hunting and to hunt the animals. But actually, one may wonder why the Kshatriyas were killing so many animals at that time. Actually, it was not like this, the way it is understood today. The problem was that in those days, there was so much forest, and apart from the forest, the wild animals used to come down and destroy the crops of the public who were growing the food. So the Vaishyas were growing the food, and they were disturbed by wild animals. So it was the responsibility of the king to protect them from these animals. So naturally they'll go hunting and frighten the animals to go away. Not that they go and kill mercilessly hundreds of animals freely. That was not the Kshatriya spirit. The Kshatriyas never went to the forest with the intention of simply killing. Their intention was to protect those people who were performing the farming or agriculture and protect the crops for the maintenance of the human society. So that's what it was done. So Uparijaravasu was instructed by his parents to go for that, and he went there. And when he went for that, he was thinking about his wife and wife's request. In that process, he had actually lost his brahmacharyam, or he lost his control. And what he did was he packed the semen in a leaf and packed it and handed over to a bird and told the bird to go and deliver it to his wife. So when the bird was carrying this and flying in the sky with packed semen from Uparijaravasu, the king, it was going through over the Yamuna river, and another bird attacked, and this whole packet fell into the river. When it fell into the river, a fish ate that. What was come from Uparijaravasu, that was eaten by a fish in the river, in Yamuna river. When it ate that was not an ordinary fish. That fish was an Apsaras woman from the celestial world who were cursed by a Brahmana and who had to take the body of a fish and who was staying there. She ate that. This Apsaras who has taken her name was Adrika. Adriya was the Apsaras who got this body of a fish who was cursed by a Brahmana. How that curse happened was, Once one Brahmana was standing, a very learned Brahmana was standing in the river and performing his Sandhyavandanam ceremony. That means he was standing offering oblations to the sun god. And at that time, they were playing together, some apsaras women, celestial women were playing in the river. Out of fun, one of them went and pulled his leg and pulled it down into the river. Just for the fun, they did that. As soon as the Brahmana sensed that, realized that it was one of those women who did that, he cursed her. Because you acted like an animal in the water, you become one of them. He cursed her. But when asked for forgiveness, he told her that when you deliver a twins sometime in your life, you will be released from this curse. And that is how Adriga has become a fish, and she ate this semen which was sent by Ubarijara Vasu to his wife. After eating that, she became pregnant. And from there, from that pregnancy, a boy and a girl were born. Now, she was caught eventually by a fisherman, and caught the fish and brought home. When he cut the fish, and inside he saw that a boy and a girl inside, a human life inside the fish's body. By then, Adriga was liberated from her curse, and she went back into her own original body of an apsaras woman. But when these two boys were, one boy and a girl, were found inside the belly of the fish, the fisherman who found them took them to the king, because naturally when you find something unusual in the world or in the kingdom, it is necessary to take to the king and inform the king. Just like when you find a treasure today, you are supposed to inform the government, I believe. So that's the law. So similarly, when they informed the king, Ubarijara Vasu took the boy and handed over the girl back to the fisherman to bring her up. And the girl grew up in the fisherman's house, and the boy grew up in Ubarijara Vasu's house. So in other words, these two children who have come from Ubarijara Vasu, by the twist of destiny, it has come back to him again. The boy has come back to him. The girl he left back with the fisherman grew up in his custody. So when she grew up there, naturally she was a fisherman's daughter. Her name was Satyavati. Satyavati grew up with him. The father brought her up, and she used to smell fish, and that was because she was come from a fish, and the fish smell was always in her body. And it was this Satyavati who was assisting her father, and her engagement was just to help her father, who was a fisherman. Also, they did a business of transporting people across the Yamuna River. They did that. So now and then sages will come, and sages will board this boat, and they were taken across the other side of the river. And she used to do that sometimes on her own, sometimes with her father. So this is how they lived. But once Parashara Maharshi, who was a great sage, he came on the spot. When he saw Satyavati, he could understand that she was so beautiful. And not only that, looking at her features, he realized that this Satyavati is not an ordinary woman. She is somebody somewhat special. And through his knowledge, he was able to understand the background of Satyavati. He knew that Satyavati was the daughter of Ubarijara Vasu, or this king whose daughter is this Satyavati. And so he decided that, I want to have a son, I will have it from Satyavati. You should never think that Parashara Maharshi, who was such a great sage, and it is Parashara Maharshi who wrote Vishnu Puranam, the one of the Puranas, which was Vedavyasa Maharshi's father. So this Parashara Maharshi, who wrote Vishnu Puranam, he decided to have a child from Satyavati, and so he requested Satyavati to have a relationship. But Satyavati refused. Satyavati said, it will not look proper to have a relationship with you. You are a sage and I am an ordinary fisherwoman. Parashara Maharshi, because of his yogic power, he was able to tell her that I will remove that smell of fish from your body, take it away from you, and gave her a special, fantastic smell to her body. And when he wanted to have a relationship with her, it was mentioned that they were, while crossing the river, they wanted to have that relationship. But at the same time, Satyavati mentioned that other sages in the show might see that. Parashara Maharshi, because of his yogic power, he was able to create a fog around the boat for enough time that by the time they reached the other side, that Satyavati was pregnant with Vedavyas. And Vedavyas is born actually from Satyavati of Parashara Maharshi, and that is the birth of Vedavyas. Satyavati's story is, Satyavati comes actually from Pitruloka. That is her origin. Pitruloka is a lower planetary system, just like we have celestial planets and the higher planetary systems, Janalokam, Maharlokam, Tapolokam, Satyalokam, up to Brahma. Similarly, on the lower side also, we have the lower planetary systems, Pidaloka, Padalaloka, Adaram, Sudaram. There are so many names mentioned. So in this Pidaloka, there are three types of living entities living there. They are mentioned in the Shastras as Agnishwata, Varhishpada and Somapa. There are three different types of Pitadevadas there. And this, our Satyavadi, belongs to what is known as Agnishwata group. And she was performing there and she had to accept this particular body due to offense she committed to another sage. That is also mentioned in the Valsi Puranam. These stories are mentioned there, that how this happened to Satyavadi. So Satyavadi had to accept this body, and Satyavadi later on married Shantanu, and then the whole story is in the Mahabharata. So that's how it is. Vedavyas background is that he also was born from a great sage, Parashara Maharshi. Parashara Maharshi's son is Vedavyas. Vedavyas Mani's son is Sukadeva Goswami. So you can see there is another parambra starting through Vasishta. Vasishta, Shakti, Parashara and Vedavyas and Shuvan. Like that it comes through. Now, Parashara Maharshi wrote Vishnu Puranam. Ramanuja Acharya was so fond of Vishnu Puranam that when he went to see his preceptor, Alavandar, when he went to see him, there he saw that his three fingers were closed at the time of death. That when he, but Ramanuja Acharya could immediately understand what that three fingers meant. And one of them was that he wanted that Ramanuja Acharya should glorify Vishnu Puranam in a big scale, large scale, and should propagate the great name, greatness of Parashara Maharshi and Vedavyasa Maharshi. So that is the reason when Ramanuja Acharya later on, when he had a great disciple called one of the Alvars, and to that Alvars children, he gave them the names as Parashara Bhatta and Vyasa Bhatta. And that Parashara Bhatta became one of the greatest of authorities on the Vishishtadvaita philosophy or the qualified monism. Or Vishishtadvaitam is the first Vaishnava philosophy in this planet, which comes from the Sri Sampradaya or Lakshmi Sampradaya as it's called. So I think we'll stop there. It's 10:07. All glory to Srila Prabhupada.